In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
20 minutes after 5 o'clock, Alan Adams right here with us in studio this afternoon as we talk films again. Great to have Janice Savage here.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's funny. I've seen her in a couple of things. We actually talked about one of them here probably a couple of years ago now. I believe it was called Hawk and Rev Vampire Hunters.
Oh.
Which was a delight. Just the sort of like loving comedic homage to the sort of the sort of VHS tape you'd rate it, you rolled in 5 minutes before they closed.
I'll take that one.
Yep,
yeah.
That's the one I want. No, it's great, and the movie sounds phenomenal. Like,
what a killer cast!
Well, it's a great cast. Like, I've tried to steer clear too much of as far as like the story is concerned because I like to sort of go in clean. But like, what little bits it just sounds really fascinating, and I think it's great for folks around here to have the opportunity to speak to someone who was so intimately involved with the creation of a movie like this. Because I think you alluded to it in part during your conversation, but it's like, there's just a lot that those of us who aren't directly involved with film production, there's a lot we don't know about how it goes, you know, a lot that we don't know about, we don't understand about the process. It's a chance to hear a little bit about how the sausage is made from one of the sausage makers, right? Which is pretty cool.
There you go. That's a Thursday night Bangor Arts Exchange. All right, we'll talk a little movies, but then we really want to hear as much, if not more, about the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, we'll breeze through the movies here in a couple minutes, right. and then we'll have some banana time.
Excellent. Let's do it.
One box office release, one at home streamer. The movie I went to the movies to see was Blue Beetle, which is the
number one at the box office.
The latest entry in the DC Extended Universe, and for those out there who are wondering, maybe one of the best. Like, ooh. And granted, that's a fairly low bar for a lot of the DC movies, but this one's pretty solid as far as that goes. Largely, I think, because of its it's not a homework movie like a lot of these are. Like, you could go in with zero knowledge about the DCEU and still have a wonderful time with this movie. And then on the other side of things, we take to Amazon's Freevee for the Amazon Freevee original Puppy Love, which is a romantic comedy that involves puppies. And so you know I'm here for it. So which one would you like to talk about first?
Puppies.
Yeah.
Puppies.
Again, the film is called Puppy Love. It stars Lucy Hale and Grant Gustin, and it's basically a pretty straightforward romantic comedy. The basic gist is you have Nicole, who is a sort of a wild child who's struggling to find her place in the world. Parties a little too much. Isn't necessarily what direction she wants to go in. Had artistic aspirations, but wound up becoming a professional home stager because those are the sorts of jobs that people have in these kinds of movies. On the other hand, we've got our guy Grant Gustin, who is sort of a closed off, introverted loner. Spends a lot of time in his house. He works in IT, works remotely, and has all the sort of accoutrements that you expect from this sort of character in this sort of movie. Various collectibles out and about in his apartment. And he's struggling with anxiety and so has become very, very insular in his life. Through varying shenanigans, circumstances, hijinks, whatever you want to call it. So these two seemingly at odds folks are both looking for love. But what they find first is a different kind of love. The love of a good dog.
Oh.
Our guy goes and adopts a pet at the behest of his therapist, who's like, you need some other living creature in your life to help sort of bring you out of your shell. And reluctantly, he goes to the shelter and finds a sweet little spaniel that he names Chloe and quickly falls in love with. And then, meanwhile, our heroine, she stumbles upon a little fuzzy mutt fella who's digging through the trash outside of her apartment. She tries to resist his charms, but eventually she winds up bringing him into her life. And then the two of them get on Tinder, like you do. They both have pictures with their respective dogs. They wind up matching and go out on what turns out to be an absolutely disastrous date. They immediately are at odds. There's very little in the way of connection, but it's the sort of lack of connection where, again, we're all aware of what kind of movie this is. And that would be the end of it, except, the dogs, her dog, named Channing Tatum, and he is referred to as Channing Tatum, full name,
nice.
Throughout. Channing Tatum takes quite a liking to Chloe, a very active liking, if you catch my drift. And they're both kind of horrified and embarrassed, and they agree to go their separate ways. Well, it turns out, Rich, Channing Tatum and Chloe, they're going to be parents.
Oh, boy.
So our heroes, they're going to be doggy grandparents, and they need to figure out their circumstances. And from there, it goes precisely the way you expect it to. The ebbs and flows could have been penned by ChatGPT. It is very very predictable in that way. The nearest thing I could think of, it's like if a Hallmark movie had a lot more cursing in it. It's that sort of deal. But that being said, it's still very sweet. And again, it's two very charming leads. And again, a lot of dog stuff. And I love looking at puppies being cute. And there's a lot of puppies being cute in this movie. Even as the relationships of their humans, rises and falls. Those two pups, Chloe and Channing Tatum, are meant to be, and that is all. That is clear throughout, and really, that's all you want. And the risk of spoiler alerty, but I know I appreciate this knowledge, this kind of foreknowledge, and I'm sure the listeners do too. We did a quick at about the 45 minute mark. We did a quick check on does the dog die?
Right.
Because I don't need that in my life.
No.
And you can safely say nothing bad happens to any of these dogs any point.
Good.
It all works out well for them. As for their humans, I'm not going to say, but you can probably figure it out. So puppy love. It's a very sweet sort of trifle of a rom-com that will while away your time, and then you can immediately just kind of forget about it.
Talking movies with Alan Adams here on Downtown. All right, that's one. Number two.
So Blue Beetle. Now, I am the sort of person who knows who Blue Beetle is. That does not necessarily... I think that puts me maybe in the minority, even among... basic comic book fans. Like, Blue Beetle's kind of a deep cut. Like, not like a super deep cut, but the character's been around since since the 60s, but he really came to prominence I think in the 80s when he kind of got his own book and then kind of got merged into the Justice League. The sort of bromance that blossomed between him and the character Booster Gold, I think really elevated the interest of the character. However, this movie's not about that version of Blue Beetle. This one is about the second Blue Beetle, who is a young Latino man living in they refer to it as the Edge Keys. It's Florida, but it's not Florida. Like, it's that kind of deal. And we get to basically experience what I think is probably the first like primarily Latino superhero movie, certainly in the larger sort of comic book universes. And the movie really benefits from that representation in a way that I think allows for a lot more accessibility. Like I said, it's not a homework movie. It is a movie that you can watch on its own and enjoy it. I worried a little bit because this is sort of at the tail end of the James Gunn sort of takeover of DC and we don't know what's staying and what's going. Although the early indications seem to be that this Blue Beetle will be sort of incorporated into the new DC cinematic universe, whatever form that takes, whenever it takes it, because again, everybody's on strike, so God only knows. But yeah, so the basic gist. We open in some sort of isolated frozen tundra, where a fancy aircraft drops out of the sky, and we meet the CEO of Cord Industries, Victoria Cord. Cord is a name that will be familiar to anyone who is familiar with Blue Beetle. But Victoria Cord is played by Susan Sarandon, of all people. She's in this movie, she is there on behalf of her company. They're searching for something that they simply call the Scarab. They're searching for the Scarab. It looks like after many years of searching, they may have finally found it. Then we meet our young man, Jaime Reyes, who has just returned from Gotham Law back to his hometown to reengage with his folks, his family, everyone's very proud of him. He's the first of their family to go to college, et cetera. But then the bad news starts coming, and it's like, our rent has been raised, so we're gonna lose the house, and the auto shop that we've run for, you know, however many years, that's been closed down. And all of this is largely due to the influences of the aforementioned Cord Industries, which is slowly pushing its way into this neighborhood. And, the gentrification is doing what it do. By the way, I need to make mention of this real quick. His uncle Rudy, played by George Lopez, I gotta tell you, Rich, I'm not a fan of George Lopez.
No, I'm not either.
This is easily the most I've enjoyed him in anything ever. Ever. Like he's very good here. But anyway, so he's comes back with all these big dreams about getting his family back on their feet, and doesn't go according to plan. Through various, and sundry twists and turns, he winds up in the employ of the Cords, but not necessarily in a way that is particularly pleasant. I'm trying to navigate this without spoiling things too much. He winds up connecting with Jennifer Cord, the daughter of Ted Cord, who previously ran Cord Industries. He, who is known to those of us in the know as the original Blue Beetle, but he's been gone for many years. He's disappeared. That is why Victoria runs the show. And, Jenny has some questions about the way her aunt is running things. And so, she manages to get her hands on a little something, and circumstances lead her to place it into the hands of our hero, Jaime Reyes, who turns out you don't necessarily always have a choice when you become a superhero, and when it forces itself on you, you just gotta go with it. And that's what happens to our man, and then away we go. I'm gonna leave it there, simply because what I really want to talk about is how just fun this movie is, because when we've talked about this in the past, DC hasn't been good about fun in this sort of this cycle. And so to see that, it's like you can almost start to get little bits. It's like, oh, okay. So this, you know, if they had all sort of had this attitude, things might have worked out for them a little bit better. And it makes me, you know, it makes me glad that we're going to see this character continue forward, because again, leaving aside the importance of representation, it's just this wonderful cast of characters, and it's built around this notion of family and the importance of that familial love. And and you get to throw in a pretty solid origin story. There were a couple moments that were very reminiscent of, I'm dating myself here a little bit, a few Greatest American Hero moments, if that makes sense, like where you got a guy who's kind of figuring it out on the fly and doesn't really know what he's doing, which is super fun. And then we sort of build to a pretty standard, like, superhero movie climax. It's like, oh, it's, you know, it's two guys who are more or less, you know, who have more or less the same skill set, you know, fighting each other. You know, there are some big CGI explosions, and I'll leave you to decide, you know, whether you want to think about, you know, who comes out on top in the end. You could probably guess. It's not a lot of surprises here, but again, as I said, the bar's low, but as far as quality movies in DC go, this one clears it pretty handily. Like, it's really a pretty good time.
Excellent. All right, you had first of all, belated happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Over the weekend, you got to celebrate in a very cool way for a guy who loves baseball. Tell us about seeing not one, but two games with the Savannah Bananas.
Man, I've been fascinated by the Savannah Bananas ever since I realized they existed. For those who are unfamiliar, the sort of the easiest way to describe it, and this isn't quite accurate, but I mean, I feel like it gets you most of the way there. It's the Savannah Bananas are basically like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. In that it's, the show, it's all about the show. It's all about spectacle. Jesse Cole, the guy who sort of created what is now known as Banana Ball, out of the sort of, he took over what was in 2016, basically a team in a collegiate wood bat summer league. Like, that's, it wasn't a professional team. It wasn't anything like that. And as he sort of like ran the team, he got this sense of different ways in which to turn baseball into something more than baseball, like to lend an element of spectacle to it. And thus Banana Ball is born. And so you have these players who, again, are legitimately talented baseball players. Like, these are real athletes. This is not a joke. But they fill in the gaps with other stuff. And so you've got, you know, you've got dancing on the field. You've got, whether it's the players or they have a dancing umpire who is a delight. As well as a dancing first base coach, which, by the way, Maceo, the dancing first base coach, is legit. Like, man, that guy got us after it. The rules are different. It's designed in a way to accelerate the pace.
Yeah, what's the foul ball rule if a fan catches a foul ball?
If a fan catch clean catch of a foul ball, batter's out.
That's great.
And it happened I want to say three times over the course of the two games that we watched. But yeah, it's like if they catch it and they get brought down on the field, introduced to the crowd, like the whole thing. And you get, you know, there's a guy on stilts, and there's a guy with an astronaut helmet, and there's a guy who at one point he's got a flaming bat. And
I've watched two or three guys do a backflip and then catch a ball.
Oh my God. The backflip catches. There was a sequence that was just delightful, and this was in the Saturday night game. The pitcher was a left-handed Canadian, and he goes out there, and for one batter, he takes a hockey stick out there with him, and instead of pitching, he's shooting the ball at the catcher. Does that a couple times, and then we get a whole thing where he like balances the ball on the stick. Flips it up, catches it barehanded, mid-motion, and delivers a pitch, which is hit into center field, backflip catch. It was one of the most incredible like sequences of events I've ever seen on a baseball field. But here's the thing. Like, it's always on. when you're at a Bananas game. It's
and these are the guys people might remember. This is the team Bill Lee was with for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. Before they came to Portland, they were playing in they played in Brockton, Massachusetts. Johnny Damon played on their team.
I saw a clip of that. Yeah.
And apparently Doug Flutie also pitched for a moment. But yeah, it's so fun because on the other we gotta take a moment to recognize the contributions of the party animals.
The Washington Generals of this operation.
Except the party animals don't always lose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
No, it is much tougher to fix a baseball game than it is a basketball game. The party animals are just equally talented, but they've all cultivated this fantastic, like, late 80s, early 90s, like, teen comedy villain vibe. At one point I turned to Sheridan and I'm like, man, it's like the entire team is made up of Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. And it's just like mullets and big mustaches and the ridiculous sunglasses.
Nice.
And doing the whole wrestling heel thing, like really playing it up, like, and just sort of.
Was there like a Clue Hayward kind of guy?
They're all Clue Hayward. Like, that's the thing. It's love like, it. The gigantic handlebar mustaches and all of that. There's one guy who was they made him Irish. I don't know if he's actually Irish, but so like he's like they play Irish music when he comes up and he does little jigs, and sometimes everyone in the field also does the little jigs. Meanwhile, through all of this, between every inning, there's something going on the field, whether it's fans like doing the bat spin races around. Or I think one of my favorites was the pregame when a couple of players went around the top of the stadium throwing bananas to the field where volunteers were trying to catch them in their pants. The name of the game is Bananas in the Pants, which initially unsettled me. I'm like, there are kids here. And it's like, oh, at one point there was like a dad bod dance off. They have a couple of traditions where they do stadium sing-alongs where it's like Hey Baby, where everybody sings along and they have a big choreographed dance, both teams, everybody involved. And then this was very cool. At one point, I think it's roughly seventh inning stretch E time, but it's they tell everyone to turn on their phone flashlights. They kill the lights. And they do a sing-along to Coldplay's Yellow.
Nice.
And it was so remarkable because you're in there, everybody's waving their things around, and it was just very, very cool. And it was just such a wonderful, like, wonderfully inclusive kind of atmosphere. Because it's one thing I didn't understand until I got there was how wildly popular they are with young people. Like, I had no idea. Like, and again, but they're so good at social media, like TikTok and all that stuff. At one point on Friday night, they actually invited three young fans to come up and do TikTok dances with one of the players. And just like all this stuff. And they're so good at engaging with their fans. But yeah, these kids are like kids decked out head to toe in gear, like jerseys, like the whole shebang. And it was just one of those things where you realize it's like, oh, I guess I am a little bit out of touch. Because I love it, but it's like I had no idea it was as, although considering, the tickets for both, for both games sold out in a matter of hours when they went on sale. Both games were sellouts, 7,000 plus at Hadlock. Gates opened at 5:30. If you got there at 5:30, you were going to be struggling to find a seat because there were literally thousands of people lined up outside of Hadlock when we got there, and we rolled in at, I don't know, like 5:15 or so.
Well, that's awesome.
It was so cool. And again, like I advise you to take a little time and find the rules of Banana Ball because of the way it's set up, just so many neat kind of elements. Like,
well, they do points, right?
Every inning counts. Yeah. So it's like basically whoever scores the most runs in an inning gets a point. And so that's how it progresses until the final inning, which is every run is a point. And so it's anybody's game. All this while there's a clock running.
Oh, man.
First pitch, they start the clock 2 hours, and they will not start an inning after the two-hour mark. So it's like, once you're there, like, that's it. You're in the final inning, and you're just – it's just constant. Like, the music is happening, and they have this wonderful sort of playlist, and all the while – it's like Bill Veeck meets – P.T. Barnum meets, I don't know, someone who hosts a children's show. Like, I mean, it's just like this Jesse Cole, who actually wrote a very good book, by the way. It's called Banana Ball, where he kind of talks about the development of how he arrived at, you know, creating this thing. It's really worth a read if you have any interest. But it's just such a great time, you know?
Was this a surprise? Did you know about it?
I did.
Oh, okay.
I did. I've known about it. Sheridan bought me tickets for my birthday, for the game on my birthday, for Valentine's Day.
Oh, nice.
And then I was like, well, I mean, we're going to be down there anyway. So I signed up for the ticket lottery and got in so I could, you know, so I could register to buy tickets. And so I bought tickets for the Saturday night game. Like, why not? Like, yeah. we're going to do this. Like, I don't know when the opportunity is going to come again. Now I have a hunch because, yeah, they sold out two. Yeah. Like, they'll be back.
They'll be back, yeah.
Because, again, it was so well-received, and it was such a great time. And, again, it's just, like, you've never seen anything quite like it. And those opportunities are kind of rare in this life to see something new. And that's what this was for me. And, again, as you said, like, I love baseball. I always have. And to see it played with such joy, like, that was the thing that was just universal across everybody who set foot on that field, was the sheer joy of playing the game, of doing what they were doing. Like, they were like, everyone was clearly having fun, and when that happens, when you watch people have fun like that, you can't help but enjoy yourself.
Very cool.
Banana Ball, I am I feel very privileged to have had the chance to experience that.
That's great. Well, thanks, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.
Sharing the story there.